taking care of business. Path to Pro Radio is on.
Smoking licks, Billy Bo. Smoking
like
licks.
New guitar? Got...
Very nice, very nice. It's Path to Pro Radio. I'm Jimmy Ray, and that is Billy Crispo.
Hey, thank you. And we have some great, great things to talk about.
Yeah, you know, today's topic of probate is one that, you know, as the baby boomer generation gets a little older, you know, this is about the time. I'm 63. What are you, 51?
24,
28. 25. You know, our parents are getting older, and this is about the time that people our age are dealing with probate, but they don't really...
No, they don't know what to do.
And they don't know what to do, but it's also sometimes it's an afterthought when in reality, just simply as a mechanism to make it smoother when our loved ones pass on, yeah, I mean, people don't think about it for whatever the reason.
It's a lot more things you have to do that we tend to put off. And that's why Bruce is here. And Bruce and I have had many discussions about this, and he's done so well. Bruce Johnston.
Bruce.
He's in Washington State, where it's sunny and warm and high in the 80s, right, Bruce? wait a minute. He's got an umbrella drink on, I could tell.
Yeah. Flip-flops. You're wearing flip-flops, aren't you?
And my short pants.
So he's with Keller Williams, Greater Seattle. And it's great to have you on the show today, Bruce. Thanks for agreeing to be on Path to Pro Radio.
Yeah, and it's great to be here. So really looking forward to this.
Oh, well, and the other thing that Bruce and I have in common, that we both love Hawaii. Right, Bruce? I mean,
Yeah, well, that's really rare. I mean, for you guys, I mean, that's only the two people I've ever met that like
No,
Hawaii.
Most people don't like Hawaii.
Everybody hates Hawaii, really.
So,
who wants that, after all?
Bruce and I talk about that a lot. But so, Bruce, tell them a little bit about how you got yourself involved in this. Because you had a personal situation. I've had a personal situation. We're all getting, like Jimmy said, we're all getting involved with this stuff now.
In my world-class intro. I covered all that.
That was sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem.
Can I do it again? Welcome. Okay, go ahead. You know what we sound like a little bit? Like click
What's
and clack.
Those award-winning click and clack.
So maybe we can get that.
Yeah. So Bruce is a realtor in Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. So how did you get into the probate end of real estate?
Thank you.
Well, in my history in real estate, I actually was already helping out some people that had gone, that were either going through or they had gone through it. And so, and I didn't realize that until really the other day when I sat back and I thought about what I've done in the past. And so I've also had, you know, situations with, you know, family members who have died. And Bill had mentioned to me about probate, maybe about a year ago or something like that, maybe a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. And so I started to look at it, and, you know, after a while, you know, I was looking at this, and I'm going, you know, I'm really going to have to refocus the real estate business that I'm involved with. So instead of trying to help everybody, I'm going to narrow down my focus. And I thought this was pretty interesting. And the more I delve into the probate world, the more interesting it really becomes.
It's complicated, isn't it? It's not as easy as people...
That's right. Yes. You know, in fact, the response from most people that I speak to about this that are involved with it, or even an attorneys have told me the same thing, is that it's overwhelming, particularly for the personal representative who's taking care of the estate affairs. And one clerk at the county courthouse the other day told me that it was not only overwhelming, but it was very confusing for her when she went through it with her own mother.
I totally understand that. Now, the thing is there are so many things you can do, and I know that you're not a lawyer and you didn't sleep at a Holiday Inn Select last night.
But he does play one on television.
But you would know some things that people can do. Of course, we always suggest consulting an attorney for these kind of things. But just right offhand, what are some things that you know of that people should think of ahead of time to kind of help them through the probate process when it does come around, or avoid it altogether?
Sure, exactly. Okay, one of the things is that, you know, I've heard people say that, well, I heard that we should wait a year to do anything. That's actually the absolutely wrong thing you want to do, because the longer you wait to do something, the more costlier it is to the estate, and the value of that goes down, so less gets distributed to the heirs in the end.
Right.
So you're thinking, Bruce, when, like, you know, as we get older and our parents are starting to show signs of things, and it's always a difficult conversation anyway, we shake it, but you're saying we better be prepared because it can, you know, you're down, you even said it to me the other day, it gets emotional, everybody gets kind of all wrapped up in the emotion of the problems with the family member, but you're saying the sooner we can get a hold of this situation and start to work on it, the better, right?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And so hopefully, you know, people have put their estate plan together beforehand, and then when the personal representative gets a hold of the will and or living trust, well, a living trust would be different because of the fact that there's a successor trustee for that.
Yeah.
However, the will would be probated through the probate courts. So this is where that can become sticky, because you have to wait for what and get authorization from the court before you can, you know, start moving forward with the process.
Oh, well, so now let me ask you this, and forgive the interruptions, but when you cover something that, you know, I've got a question about, I'm going to poke in on it if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So if somebody has a will and you're the executor, then just by the nature of her having a will, it has to go to probate court?
Yeah, so you have to fulfill the wishes of the testator who wrote the will or who told their attorney to write the will for them.
Right.
So that all of their, you know, plans or all of their plans for the distribution of assets and paying off all the liabilities can be taken care of in accordance to what needs to be done. Because there's also, you know, taxes that need to be done too. You need to do a finalized tax return for the deceased.
But I mean, does it have to go to necessarily go to probate court because it's a will, or if the will takes care of everything going to whomever, then do we really need to go to probate court?
Oh yeah. You know, that's a good question. Yeah. I'm sorry. I misunderstood that. I was just assuming that for values over like $100,000, and it depends upon where you live. There's a value in there where you don't have to probate through the courts, from what I understand. I was told this in the state of Hawaii, anything under $100,000, you don't have to go to the probate court. I checked with some attorneys on that. Same thing here, $100,000, it's a smaller estate, but typically if there's property involved, it's definitely going to go over that number. So.
Yeah, and, you know, we learned that, unfortunately, with my father, who passed away not too long ago, a couple months ago, that you have – tell them about all those little things that we were talking about, you and I, regarding beneficiaries on certain accounts, because that will help a little bit, this whole transformation that takes place or transition that takes place. So – give us a little bit of that too, because I don't think people realize that, because that could be a problem if that's not being done properly, right?
Right. So, well, let me kind of tell you something about this. A lot of times people think that if there's a power of attorney in place, once the decedent, once someone has deceased, that power of attorney for them is no longer valid.
Yeah, that's an important fact. That
yeah.
It's done.
Mm-hmm.
So that power of attorney is not effective for anything once that person. So you can't walk in and say, well, I got power of attorney and I can sign.
That's an excellent point.
Excellent point.
Most people probably don't get that, but it goes straight into the executor of the will at that point, or the trustee.
Yeah,
as far
so
as
the
representing.
Yeah. So basically you have to petition the court, and the court is going to assign the executor who's named in the will, or personal representative, just depends on what state you live in, what they call that person in that role. And once they get the letters testamentary, that authorizes them to go ahead and act in behalf of the estate to go ahead and start selling assets if there's no restrictions on there. Now, there's court restrictions that can take place as well. Typically, in most wills, a bond requirement is waived, but it could be brought up. Someone could say, okay, no, I want to have a bond in place for this person that's going to be doing everything. So
it's amazing.
Even court approval on certain sales of certain items, that happens a lot too. California, I hear it's real sticky down there about trying to get, you know, a property sold there. And the unfortunate thing for a buyer is that they could actually make an offer on a property that is going through the probate court. It gets approved. I mean, well, they go for an approval, and then at court, the judge can actually put it up and say, okay, who wants to bid the price up?
Really?
Yeah. So you could actually lose the property if you're the buyer and your price gets bid up.
Now, is that just in Looney, Washington State, or is that all over the country?
No. That's what the agents down in California have been telling me about what's been going on down there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's their challenge down there. So, you know, it's different from, you know, different states. But, I mean, there's some things that are, you know, still the same, but there's different rules in different areas on how things get done.
Okay, so basically, and maybe I missed this, forgive me, but if there is a will that says so-and-so, Bob is the executor, and this is where I want all my stuff to go, does it still need to go to prostate court?
Haven't been there.
Just want to know.
All right.
I'm making a butt out of myself right now.
Yeah, you're an ass.
So does it still need to go to probate court? I mean, or is it, if everything is covered in the will, does it need to go to prostate court? Is that a yes?
Well, you know, there's that ruling in regards to if the value of the estate is under a certain amount.
Oh, I see.
Know, you may not have to do that. But I probably the best thing to do is run it through probate court because of the fact that everything will be documented there.
Or an attorney. I mean, you call an attorney first, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's the very first thing you should do is call the attorney that can help with the estate planning probate process.
So you really, I'm really impressed, Bruce, and it takes a lot for me to get to where I'm at right now. But an agent, now this, if you're listening, this is a real estate agent, a realtor, a broker in Washington State who has said, you know what, my niche is going to be probate cases. And what an interesting niche. And you sound like you really know what you're talking about.
And you spent some time, Bruce, this wasn't something that you've been studying it. And this is why I wanted to bring you on, because you actually, you're at a different level. Actually, since we started, you have been doing research and research and research. Where are the mistakes, do you think? Where are the biggest mistakes people are making in this? Because there could have been some big mistakes, and some of the stuff I didn't really do myself. It was already done, and so where do you think the problems begin with people that are in these situations?
A lot of times, the personal representatives, you know, we reach out and try to talk to some of these folks to see if we can help them or not. They're under the notion that the attorney is going to handle everything, and sadly, that's not what it is. In reality, the personal representative, okay, let me back up a little bit here. In the beginning, you're going to have people such as the other heirs. They might help without, you know, looking for important paperwork and things like that. And then they kind of disappear until they come looking for their money.
Yeah.
Then you have the attorney who definitely is going to go to court for you, you know, and takes care of all the legal paperwork. But other than that, the personal representative is on their own. So they end up really doing about 75% of the work in making sure that the estate is liquidated.
And you said something yesterday to me, or the day before yesterday, about the fact that this could be a full-time job.
Yes. Yeah, it is, because there's a lot of things that you need to coordinate now, especially if, you know, you have one or more properties involved. You know, a lot of times We know that some people have lived in their house for 40, 50 years. I've talked to people, they say, you know, I've been here for 55 years and, you know, they're going to have to carry me out in a box.
Yeah, that would be that's my mother. That's my mother you're talking about right now.
Yeah, this is so, done.
So basically, you know, there's that challenge there. Excuse me. Oh, got something in my throat. Sorry about that.
No worries, man.
There's that challenge there. So there's a lot of accumulation of stuff and, you know, there's a lot of sentimental stuff there. So what happens is that we get people that are, you know, family members and they get emotionally attached to it. And they're like, well, you know, we've had this for, you know, these many years in our family. They don't know what to do with it, all that kind of stuff. And so it's when, you know, we come in and we would actually help them to facilitate all these things. So I act kind of like, you know, the quarterback on the team, right? I'm passing the ball off to, you know, the members that can actually get these things done.
Now,
that's
Bruce,
what I,
how do you get into that situation? Now, have you established yourself with some local attorneys that call you to give you the leads, or how does that happen with you? How do you accumulate those?
Well, I get these leads from the courthouse here. So I have a system that's set up that we get those every month. And that's how I, you know, it tells me basically who the attorney is, who the decedent is, and who the personal representative is.
Oh, and does it give you a phone number and stuff too?
Yeah. And by the way, anytime you file a probate, it all becomes public information. So I can go right down to the courthouse, sit in front of the computer, and look up all the information I want.
Wow.
It's so cool. I mean, and what's interesting about this, let's go back to the fact that probate is not always a necessity when someone passes away, right? I mean, you could avoid probate. So that's also interesting. You know, when someone passes away or a family member, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to probate.
Yeah, and Bruce, I don't know if they have this out where you're at, but I'm my mother's caregiver, and she's up there. She's like around 90 years old. And we have arranged a thing called a deed at death. Have you ever heard that?
Yes, I heard of that.
Okay. And so at her death, it becomes my home legally on the deed.
Automatically.
So that that erases that being an issue and needing to be probate. Am I right?
Yeah, I believe so. And again, it's going to be state by state, whatever their laws are in regards to that. Yeah. So for here, if you have... this is a community state here. So typically, well, a lot of times, well, everybody I've been dealing with is basically, you know, everybody has died in the house.
Yeah. Well, they were scared. After the last couple of summers in Seattle, they were scared to go out.
Yeah. Or share the space with the people on the sidewalks. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily all had died in the house, but, you know, they died, you know, still owning a house rather. So I just kind of want to make that straight. And by the way, this is something interesting to know is that, you know, a lot of people plan to want to stay in their house when they get old and they want to, you know, pretty much die at home.
Yes.
That's not the reality though. The reality is that that's only roughly about 20%.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, I'm dealing with that right now.
Yeah, the rest of them are either in care facilities or they end up in the hospital and they die in the hospital.
Yeah.
It's interesting because that's another subject in itself where you're taking them to these facilities. Like my dad had to go, that just crazy stuff happens, unfortunately, that you have to go through with people when they get to that age and you start seeing them being different. And it's tough. I mean, for those of you that are going through that and planning to have to think about that, it's a tough decision. And like anybody else, you want to wait to the last minute and you want to talk about it and they don't want to talk about it. And if you bring it up, everybody starts crying. And so it becomes a Jerry Springer moment at the house, which you don't want to have. But these facilities that you have to take your parents to at a certain point, what a racket that business is. I mean, unfortunately, when my wife's mother passed away here at down here on, you know, where I'm, the big place over here on the ocean.
Right.
You had 1 week to get out. They actually said to me, you know, you hurry up, and she passed away. Yeah, okay, but we've got to have that place cleaned up because we got someone else coming in right behind her. So it took that terrible moment into now we've got it's a business decision.
Well, what happens if you don't?
Well, then you got to pay extra.
Are you going to evict a deceased person?
Yeah, well, the deceased is gone. You have to clean up, take all their stuff out. So they, she's gone, and now you got to, because you've personalized it, right? Because you go through different stages. So you're in that room, and it's terrible. So you go through this emotional time that becomes business.
Yeah.
And then you got all these decisions to make. And but, Bruce, the higher, where does it get complicated the most? Like, is it when there's multiple properties? Is it because, well, probably a combination of things with more family members, more brothers and sisters and other people? That could get kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of times the heirs are like, hey, I need the money. I want the money, which is like, you know, we understand that, but there's a whole big process that needs to be taken care of.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, how it works is that you basically are looking at things such as like, well, first of all, you got to put out a notice to creditors, which is a 4-month process. So people are going to file claims against the estate. And once that time frame is over, you know, basically the personal representative has to validate all those as well to make sure that they're legitimate claims. So then they end up paying, you know, funeral costs, medical costs, admin costs, including attorney fees and administrative fees, taxes, and the general debts. So that's typically the general priority list, okay? What's left over after that primarily is what goes to the heirs. And oftentimes, we find that there are people who are asset rich and cash poor.
And so they
have the house, which is their biggest asset, right?
Right, right.
But they didn't have much cash. Now, to give you an example of this, I had a client, and she lived in her house from 1965 until 2017. She was transitioning to a senior living arrangement, okay?
Yeah.
And so basically, she was just on Social Security. That was it.
So all the money was in the house.
Yeah, yeah. And fortunately, she was able to get a senior tax exemption on her property taxes here.
Yep.
But, you know, it's astronomical. I mean, I'm just guessing that the taxes on that house today are probably somewhere between $400 to $5,500
a year. Yeah.
And this is maybe like an 800 square foot house.
Wow.
In Seattle.
Welcome to Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What if there's back taxes owed? The person just dies, and you're going through their books, and their back taxes owed. So the state is going to pay the back taxes, which reduces any inheritance.
Correct. Yes, yes, because taxes are always a priority.
Yeah, they're going to get their hands in that first.
Yes.
You know, one of the ways that another suggestion that I'm sure you'll agree with, Bruce, is to avoid probate-ish type of issues is on checking and savings accounts, putting one of the kids on those accounts so that once she passes, you're the surviving heir of that account. And, you know, that kind of eliminates the, you know, okay, well, this was my mother. Seriously, look, you know, you're on it and this is my account now. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that
mm-hmm.
avoids any kind of a, you know, issue and having to probate that account.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So as long, you know, you have the joint account, like you said there, we have that in place also for, you know, my parents. So
that's
brilliant.
Interesting.
That's
a smart guy. Thank you.
Yeah,
that was good. Mm-hmm. What about homeowners insurance? So you sell the house. What happens there?
Okay. This is a tricky one. So homeowners insurance, you need to notify the insurance provider about the status of the home. Let's just say that the last person in the house has moved out. Let's say they've gone to a care facility or they've died, one of the two.
Yeah.
You need to let the, and nobody's living in the house, you need to let the insurance folks know that, hey, listen, this house is vacant now, so we need to change the status on not being owner-occupied.
Hmm.
So the occupant is deceased, but the house is alive and well right
yes.
now.
Yeah.
Doing just fine.
Yeah, because, you know, It could happen. You know, things like a fire could happen, you know,
right.
Or, you know, perhaps somebody, you know, burglarizes the place where they start squatting in there.
Yeah.
So you got to let them know so that they're aware of what the status is in regards to that.
Okay. Interesting.
So, you know, this is going back to the beginning where the wills, people avoid that. I don't like talking about death and having to, you know, when you have multiple kids and you got to put a will together. I mean, I know it's important. And I guess, you know, now that we're getting older, we start to think about all these things that have to be put into place. And so tell us about the connection between the will and the probate process a little bit. And, you know, and talk about the living trust, because I think those are really interesting topics that people have to be aware that it's a tool.
Well, I got to tell you, before you go into that, we're living through the nightmare of a living trust for my in-laws.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Julia's dad passed away in May of 20, and we're still standing around waiting for, you know, what's up? Our money here, or her money. Won't be half mine in Virginia. That's how it works. But I'm just saying. So, you know, the trust that process. And I asked an attorney, I said, is there a time frame in which it has to happen? And he said, only if it's stated in the documents. Otherwise, it could take friggin' 10 years.
The document is the will.
Correct. Right. Or the trust. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt that, but I just wanted to say this particular adjudication of a trust or execution of a trust is taking forever. And, you know, they're scared to talk to them, and it's just a crazy situation.
So it's interesting, not to interrupt you, interrupted me.
Please, and I interrupted Bruce.
And so there's three interruptions here.
Get ready to interrupt him, Bruce.
Okay, good. Okay. So in my will that my dad had, said that that all these things had to be taken care of in 90 days.
Beautiful. See, that's what we don't have. In this trust.
And just let's say there was concern from another party. Oh. So, you know, why do I have to do it so fast? And, you know, but it was clear. They wanted, it didn't have to all sell, but there had to be resolution to what's going on with that situation.
That's brilliant. And that's what we're lacking. So what are your thoughts, Bruce?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good idea, because it really makes the personal representative jump and, you know, pull the trigger and get things going. A lot of times people just, they're so overwhelmed, they don't know what to do. And by the way, that is a job that is one that you don't look for. It's one that has been appointed to you and you had no choice in the matter. It's whatever the testator who created the will, whatever they decided, who was going to take care of their affairs, that's who gets assigned that assignment. And one of the things that I found out is that you can also go back to the court. You can petition the court if you're unable to carry out that, or if you need to be bonded and you can't be financially bonded, you have to request to the court that a replacement be utilized instead.
Oh. Well, let's take Jimmy's example. Let's just say that it's been taking longer than it should. What recourse do you think he may have to be able to, you know, because what if someone's doing something a little shady? Not to say that Jimmy has any shady people in his family.
No, except me. I'm
yeah. So I'm just wondering what recourse do you have in a situation that's being dragged down? Because you're looking at money that's sitting there, right?
Yeah, what does the estate attorney say?
Well, that person isn't returning calls. I mean, they're not very, good about returning calls from the other two of the kids. There are three kids, and the oldest one is the one handling it. He's the trustee, and so you know, I keep saying, you know, but there's only so much I can do,
right?
But I mean, the bottom line is that if there had been a date put in the documents, then we wouldn't be standing here right now. So when creating your will or trust, I think it's a great idea to go the Crespo way and put a time frame in there so that, I mean, a reasonable time frame, maybe even 6 months would be reasonable because of the time frame you were talking about, Bruce, so maybe up to 4 months for the notifications and stuff. I mean, you know, maybe 6 months is the right amount. But some date that this needs to be handled by so people can move on with their lives.
Right. And that's really what it's all about. And that's why, you know, we always like to come in and just let people know that, hey, you know, here's some other things that you need to take care of. For instance, like, you know, they're going to have to get the house cleaned out. They need to get an estate sale done. They need to get repairs done in the house. Landscaping on the property still needs to be kept up. By the way, I was just speaking with a contractor the other day who was remodeling a house. He said that the tenant had been in the house for 6 years and never cut the yard. And the owner lives overseas.
I was hoping he lived on the beach.
Jurassic Park.
So, you know, you've got all that upkeep to do. And by the way, he and I were talking, and he said that the furnace filter was so clogged, he said it was literally black.
No.
And, you know, yeah, basically, if you don't change it at least a minimum, you know, twice a year, then, you know, it's going to create problems for the rest of the system. Yeah.
You know what I learned? These estate sales. So we're talking about percentages that these people take. So you go in there, you call the estate salespeople, they come in, or the auction people, they look at all the properties, and, you know, they want a lot of stuff. I mean, they do want to take a lot of stuff. So this company came in, very nice. I interviewed two people, and one is based out of the Florida where they were, and one the other, his family is out of Chesapeake, Virginia. They also have an auction house here. So anyway, I'm thinking, you know, the percentages are, they wanted 40%. Bruce, on everything that it could sell out of that property. So they want to sell a lot. And so we left it up to them. Then I interviewed someone else who wanted 35%. I went with them. She's a very nice lady. But you really never get your money on anything in there. I mean, you never get anything back.
I'm not going to go through all that.
Yeah. You just, you know, let it go and then see what you can get. They cleaned the place up. They actually cleaned the entire house after it was over. It was great. They took everything out, anything that was left over. What was remaining went to the, let's say, some charity or something. And that was it.
And that's a component of my wife's as well. There was a company that took all this stuff. And these folks had some stuff from the Orient and stuff like that to sell. And I mean, I understand that is going to take maybe even a little longer than 6 months, but 2 years later, we're still talking about
it. So wait a minute, money was sold. And so there's money, there's extra money into the pot.
Correct.
From this. Where's the money?
It's like the tip jar at our gigs.
Surely.
Yeah. Right. There's extra money coming in that we don't see.
No way. Like our gigs, because we never get it.
We never get it.
Yeah.
No.
So it goes to the guys leading the band. But anyway, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple of things that you may not have thought about is that sometimes people have collections of things that are worth a lot. Right. And, you know, for instance, like there's people that have gun collections. There's people, I heard of someone who had like a train collection, you know, Lionel train collection that was worth, you know, $40,000. So, you know, there's all these things.
Were they real trains?
I'm not too sure. 40 grand? This is what I was told. Yeah. So. But well, listen, I used to drive by this guy's house, and he had a little train out in the yard that he would ride around.
He's not cuckoo. Yeah. He's not the nut on that block.
Yeah, no.
But think about it, you know, people, you know, have a lot of stuff. There's a lot of eclectic people out there. And, you know, a lot of the boomers, you know, they're into some really cool stuff, you know, because a lot of things were around. Remember, that's the age group from 1946 to 1964.
Yeah.
That's when the toy industry had such a big boom.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I keep watching those shows on TV going.
Do you know who Mattie Mattel is by chance?
Mattie Mattel. Oh.
Mattel.
Mattie
toys.
Mattel. That's right. Redheaded doll. I had one of those back in the early 60s.
Really?
I sure wish I knew where he was, because I know that baby would be worth some money.
Did you keep all your Barbie dolls in the box?
I didn't have Barbie dolls, man. Okay. Don't go slamming me now. Now you're
getting... you see, here's the other thing is that, you know, we help, you know, those that are going through this probate process, you know, find the right people that can help them come in and appraise those things, those items, and also get them sold.
Now, do you get a spiff from companies like if you call a company that Joe Blow's Antique Sales to come in and clean out a house and sell it, will you get a percentage of that, their business?
The agent.
What I'm looking for from them is just a future referrals.
Aha. There's your payoff.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I think that, but what we were talking about, Bruce, is that this is such a delicate process. Like, look what Jimmy's going through. Mm-hmm. You want, as an agent, you want your right team behind you, the right attorney, all these right. people that you've already kind of checked out to make sure that it's mm-hmm. legit and that they're going to do the job. And then what's interesting is that they go to you to see, you're answering questions that may have nothing to do with real estate, which right. I think is really awesome because you now can help them get through this. I mean, I got to admit, I avoided the subject because it's a sad subject, and I don't, you know, it's like selling life insurance to people. I sold life insurance for about a day. Yeah. No, it was about 6 months. I got out of real estate. I go, well, I'll try this. It's not fun selling death. So, but you are going to handle something for someone that needs direction. And mm-hmm. and what we always talk about is the peace of mind that the pro is there handling it. And I think at least the guys our age that are in real estate should know what to do here, and they need to go to someone like you to help you out.
Yeah. Does anybody ever do you? You know what I mean. Do you?
No, we don't. Do I have people? No clue.
I know where I'm going, and it's coming. Here it comes.
Drum roll.
Do you ever say to people, "Listen, I think you should call an attorney and get consult an attorney. Then let's get back together, and I'll handle all this stuff for you." I mean, do you ever feel like you need to disclaim yourself?
Yeah, get out of it.
To let them to put the onus on an attorney, or do you feel more? Do you feel so confident about your knowledge of probate and all that that you? You wouldn't need to go there because you feel good about what you know.
Yeah, well, basically what I do and I advise on is everything that is non-legal associated with the probate process. So again, going back to that personal representative, the onus is on them. They are 100% responsible. They are the fiduciary for the estate, okay?
Yeah.
And so they have to take care of everything. The attorney's going to handle the legal paperwork for them, go to court, like I said previously. But really, they're left on their own, unfortunately. And there's just so many things that they have to take care of. And I'm just talked to Bill about this the other day, and I was creating this checklist of things that we need to check for. It's unbelievable that mm-hmm. what I came up with, and there's even more that I can think of. You know, such things as like, you know, hey, now I'm dead. Do you have my passwords, right?
Ooh. Passwords.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't believe like how many passwords we use nowadays. It's just crazy, you know?
Yeah. I did think about these accounts, all these accounts that people have in the bank. I mean, mm-hmm. if you don't do the banking right, it may take some time to prove that you do have access to the accounts if you weren't not claimed as a beneficiary on that account.
Yeah. So the personal representative was once they get the letters testamentary, then they have the right to go in and take over those accounts.
Right. And I remember I had to go into the bank. I had to show the death certificate and had to go in and even show that even with the beneficiary, they wanted a backup. They wanted that backup information if we're going to close the account. So that was interesting. Mm-hmm. I want you to address what we can do in advance. How do we resolve this? And we want to just touch on the living trust so that we can understand that we can do stuff now that may be easier to do that gets us out of the problems later on. So talk about the living trust and why this is important now.
Yeah. So that living trust really, you know, it's another instrument that you can use in the estate planning and end of life planning. So basically, in regards to that, one of the best things you can do is to put all your high ticket items in there, like, you know, cars,
home,
boats, RVs,
home.
Yeah. Home is number one. Yeah. Yeah. Now here's the thing that you have to remember. Sometimes people will go ahead and they'll move they'll change the title on the property to their living trust in regards to the property there. And then, you know, they'll go back later and they'll go, you know what, we want to get a loan on this. And they'll go ahead and they'll put it back into their own names. They'll get a loan, then they'll forget to put it back in, and then voila, one of them dies. Guess what? they have to go through probate.
Now, is it possible for them to deed at death situation be in the living go to the living trust immediately upon their death as a predetermined situation, arrangement?
Yeah, you know, I met with someone. Their parent had died. There was no one else. There was a living trust. The property was in a living trust. It was all paid off. And it was 2 weeks after death that we were talking about the sale of her property. She was one of the successor trustees.
I'm sorry, I'm lost. That's
well,
it.
That's how fast
I don't know what you just said, man.
That's how fast that they were able to go ahead and get the home on the market.
Oh, 2 weeks, gotcha.
Yeah.
I totally got lost. And Billy is losing it, right? So we'll edit this part out.
Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Write down the time.
40:49. Cutting that out because I lost it for Jimmy Ray. This happens sometimes. The last thing I want to say before I pass out is the issue with the living trust. All right.
Go ahead.
Hold on a second, Bruce.
I told you this was loose. You had no idea just how loose it was, but we will edit this part out, I promise.
Okay.
Okay, Bruce.
All right. Okay. 1, 5, 6. Okay, so the question about the living trust. So if you have a piece of property in the living trust, I don't want to confuse people because you can't, after the fact, put something into the living trust after someone dies, can you?
No.
No, so it's outside the death situation. So if we do all that and put everything in the living trust, you're safe. So, but here's the issue. If the house goes into the living trust, you cannot borrow money out of the house unless you take it out to get qualified, because the living trust is almost an entity by itself. Doesn't have credit established. Is that correct? Am I thinking about this straight?
Yeah, you know, and it's best to check with the lender on that. But, you know, this is some of the situations that I've heard of before. So it's like, okay, that's really, you know, kind of a tough deal. So I know I had, well, let's see, they paid cash for their homes. But I had, he had a revocable trust, and he was the trustor, died suddenly, and the first property went into what was known as a bypass trust. Mm-hmm. And we were able to sell that. And the only thing I needed, the only thing my office needed, and the only thing that the title company needed was a copy of the trust.
Interesting.
So what is a bypass trust? What does that mean?
Okay, now we're talking attorney talk here. So.
Oh, all right.
No.
I mean, in the big picture, what's the difference between that and just a living trust?
Well, it was. I don't remember exactly what it all said in there, but it was part of the, I guess, like the successor trust to the one that was for the truster that was living.
Got it.
So that was the new name of the trust. I mean, that's how we sold the property in that name.
I see.
And then there was another property they had, which they gave it a different name and a different trust. And so we sold that one about a year and a half later. And so, again, we sold it in the name of that trust. And it was very quick. Again, all I needed was just a copy of the trust agreement. So that was really, really simple and easy to do. One of the things that will be required, not only having the letters testamentary from the court, the title company here in Washington, they're going to require a probate affidavit that needs to be filled out.
And by whom?
By the
executor?
Personal representative.
Gotcha.
And so they filled it out, just attesting that they are the, you know, personal rep for the estate. And then they can give clear title after that.
So the best, so really, I mean, from my 10 cents, mm-hmm. It seems like the best way to handle and avoid probate altogether is either to have your name on all the stuff, houses, cars, checking, savings, 401k accounts, or if you can, as a beneficiary or whatever. But just as much as you can do that, the executor of her estate should be in on all that stuff, so that when she or he passes, then that doesn't have to be litigated. It's already taken care of. You're it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty quick to do. So, you know, you're not going through all the situations of like having to go to probate. You know, you got to go to court. You got to get letters testamentary.
Yeah.
You know, you got to notify all the creditors.
What you're going through right now, Jimmy. Yeah, I mean, you're going through stuff that who wants to go through that? I mean,
not me.
I mean, right now, it's a pain.
And what sucks is I can't quit right now. I can't resign.
Yeah.
And the other thing that we want to mention to our clients that are going through this is that, look, we want to tell them, hey, you know, you shouldn't have to go through this, you know, yourself down the road. So you might want to consult with one of the attorneys that we know to set up a trust for yourself so that, you know, it makes things easier for your heirs.
Yeah. You know, and that's, and again, a lot of people, most people, I think, don't even think about that until it's, you know, later in life or whatever. But when you get into your 60s and 70s, which I'm sure you're not there yet, Bruce. But
I'm just as old as you are.
You are?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
Do you have a will?
Yes.
How many grandkids do you have?
Yes. Can just I two. Be on it?
Anyway, so
to let you know, I think I was 30 or 31 when I created a will and a trust. Yeah,
wow.
Something like that.
Well, do you live in downtown Seattle?
No.
Oh,
no.
I was going to say, because that probably that makes sense if you're living in the middle of Seattle.
No, this actually happened in another state when I was living in Hawaii.
Oh, crime-riddled Hawaii.
Yeah.
With all those shows they have on now about
Magnum
that.
P.I.
You know, Billy was on a Magnum
P.I.
once.
We're not going to go there.
Do you realize that? He was on the show.
Who?
Billy
yeah,
Crespo.
Yeah, I was, you know, Magnum. Yeah, I told you that, Bruce. So I was on Magnum. Did I ever tell you
I told you, right, that...
You were...
Oh, John Hillerman was my client when I was in another business.
No.
Was he the butler guy?
The butler guy.
No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah. I met him. Yeah. He's a nice guy.
Him and Jim Nabors, both of them were my clients. And then I was over at Jack Lord's place.
Really?
Him and his wife, Marie.
Now we're talking
Jack
Steve
Lord.
McGarrett.
Yeah.
So.
Book him, Dano.
Wow, so you've had some celebrities, huh?
Well, yeah, you know, but I was doing something different at the time. I wasn't involved in real estate back then, but I did get a chance to meet these folks.
Well, inquiring minds want to know what line of work you were in back then, bro.
It was legitimate, believe me.
I worked for Bob's Pest Control, and
yeah,
I
was there spraying.
I was in the cleaning industry, so.
Oh, okay.
Cleaning, right. Cleaning.
Dude, well, listen.
Yeah. Wiping people out.
Yeah. Well, no, I did things a little bit more dangerous back then. I was actually, you know, we did a lot of high-rise window cleaning.
Oh. Wow, really?
Yeah, 45 stories.
Now I get why you created a will at 31.
<That's>
I knew
right.
that if we dug in long enough.
There's
we'd find
the
out
answer.
What's
there
up
it
with
is.
That? But Bruce, what an illuminating conversation we've had. And I'm sure that you've opened a lot of people's eyes today about maybe thinking about it. Maybe you're not in your 50s or 60s, but it's never too late, or rather too early, to get your paperwork in order, because there's God doesn't guarantee tomorrow to any of us, really.
That's
so you
true.
Just never know.
And, you know, Bruce, let them know where they can get, you know, there may be real estate agents that would love to get into probate and learn a little bit more about this. So give them some contact information so they can go to you for questions. Or if you're listening to this and you have a situation, you may be in another state. At least he can direct you to who to talk to and how to go through whatever you got to go through. So, Bruce, give us some information on where people can get a hold of you.
Right. Sure. Okay. So my email address is Bruce Johnston, and the last name is spelled Johnston. And at kw.com.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Good. And do you want to give out your Social Security number? No, I'm just kidding. Your phone number.
I mean, a complete ID would be good, really.
Yeah, my office number, my direct line in my office is 206 588-8444.
Good.
All right, man. Well, Bruce, listen, thank you so much for being a guest on Path to Pro Radio. We appreciate you. And listen, keep kicking butt out there in Seattle, bro.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it, man.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You so much. Good job.
Thanks
Excellent
for having me on.
You're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great guest,
that was
man.
Awesome.
Really, really good. And that's the thing about Path to Pro Radio is that, you know, it's your path to becoming the most pro you can possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
And the more info you have, like,
yep.
you know, if you're an agent, this is genius. I hadn't thought about tackling that end of the business, but it certainly is real. And it's obviously, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in the probate end of things.
It's another source. Or they can, you know, give us a email if you like to get more information. They can get us at info@PATH2pro.net. And you can ask Jimmy some questions. You can ask me some questions. I may find answers, or Jimmy.
Well, JimmyRay@KW.com as well.
Yeah. And then we can help you out. We'd love to do that. And thanks for listening today. We had a great time.
Yeah, man. It's always a blast here on Path to Pro Radio. So we hope that you'll join us next time on Path to Pro Radio, kids.
Let me get my guitar out. Hold on.
Yeah. He's got some hot licks coming up, man.
Yeah.
Make it a great day.
See you.